Hello and welcome to The On-Call Room,
a Grey's Anatomy podcast.
I'm Abby.
I'm Bree.
And it's a beautiful day to podcast. Welcome to our podcast that deep dives every episode of Grey's Anatomy. We are currently rounding out season 15 with episodes 23, 24, and 25. If you've not listened to us before, please make sure you are fully caught up on all of Grey's Anatomy so that we don't spoil anything for you. We do talk about everything that happens all the way up through, at this point in time, season 19. So go watch it all.
Yeah. There are a few ways that you can support us. You can join Patreon, www.patreon.com/theoncallroom. You get benefits for being an intern, resident, or attending. We're going to do one of the things you get for being an attending is...
Was it just attending?
For what?
The card?
Oh, no.
Sorry. I got excited.
No, it's fine. It's a Zoom hangout, and we're going to do a holiday Zoom hangout this year.
Oh, yeah. Can't wait to schedule that.
Yeah. So we have some ideas for that, and even if we don't all show off our holiday decorations with whatever holiday you choose to celebrate, you'll at least get to see each other's pretty faces and chat about Grey's Anatomy. Things are happening in the Grey's Anatomy world. So that's a really fun place because people drop all their opinions and feelings, and it's a safe space there.
It always ends really chaotically, which I love.
Oh, yeah. Always.
If you also are curious about our thoughts on season 19, we have yet to release a few episodes, but we do give those kind of in group together ones for our $10 patrons.
Yes.
So if you want to know our thoughts about what's been happening in season 19, especially coming up to Meredith's departure, we'll definitely be podcasting about that behind the paywall. And your support means a lot to us, especially this time of year. It's literally what keeps this podcast on air.
Yeah.
And last, we also have a Facebook group, which is really fun too, which you are a part of if you are a patron. So another thing you can do to support us is leave a review on iTunes or Spotify or wherever you listen. 5 scalpels, please. We love them. We read them. They are love notes to us.
We really
sometimes hate mail. No, just kidding. They're mostly not.
Once in a while, we do get a little hate mail, but, you know, keeps us humble.
Bree knows not to read them to me before we podcast.
Yeah, I know.
I have to be in a good space.
Yeah, like, hey, are you ready to hear some feedback from so-and-so? Because if not, don't.
Jesse McCartney, 1525.
If you're not, don't go on the internet today, folks. So yeah, thank you so much for supporting us. Holy shit, through 15 seasons of this podcast.
We are doing it.
Yeah. So you had like really exciting times.
I went to, well, first of all, our dear friend, Dr. Annie, who was on the podcast in season one.
Yeah, or two, maybe.
Okay, yeah. Either way, it's the funniest episode because she speaks about her partner, Ben, who they did get married. We had that on last week. And I just want to say, Bree killed it. Maid of Honor speech was brought us to tears. It brought us laughter. It ended leaving you wanting more.
That's so nice.
Which
of
is
you
always
to say.
Good. You never want to end being like, thank God.
That's over. Yeah.
Yeah. So it was literally perfect.
You know, it was really sweet.
You looked very snatched in that red dress. Oh,
thank you. Yes. You know, it was really sweet. One of Annie's friends who her husband was in the wedding party. So we spent a lot of time together and she's really lovely. But the next day she sent me 3 photos, consecutive photos of like me giving my speech, but like John sitting next to
me. John looking at you.
And she was like, I could watch your husband watch you all day long.
The amount of photos I have of John, because I photographed it, of John watching you is absurd. In awe.
He's just so proud of
me. And like twinkle eyes because they were wet.
Yeah, yeah. So
because we were crying because it was emotional. It was really, really lovely.
It was a beautiful wedding and it was fucking freezing.
But then it got colder.
And then we got a huge snowstorm, which you were not around for.
No, but it snowed on my wedding the following day in Detroit. And then I went to New York with a friend who
was also on the podcast.
Yes. Wynn, aka Patty Gonia, is a friend of mine. And he was going to New York and invited me. And we went and saw 3 Broadway shows.
Amazing.
I used to, pre-pandemic, I'd go by myself. That was like, I only did it 3 times, but that's a lot. 3 years in a row, I went by myself after wedding season as like a good job. You did it. And disassociate now. And so we saw Into the Woods, which was just so delightful. so perfect. We were in the first row, which was like, I don't want to complain and say it was too close, mm-hmm. but like my neck hurt. It was like when you go to the movie in the front row.
Yeah.
But like, I've never sat that close to Broadway. And so I've never seen their faces.
You know, yeah, like, it's different.
Oh my God. Boy, are they acting. Like all I could say is like, there are so many little things that you totally miss. So that was mind blowing. And then also, okay. If you're familiar with the West Side Story movie, the new one that just came out,
uh-huh.
the lead is Rachel Ziegler. I didn't know this. I didn't see it. I don't know why. She was sitting behind us, her and her boyfriend, who's also in the movie mm-hmm. and who are also both of them in the new Hunger Games movie that's coming out.
Okay.
Okay. Anyways, this kid next to us was like a theater, like just, I actually found him on TikTok. This sounds so creepy, but like obsessed with theater and his TikTok is whatever. And they left to go to the bathroom and he goes, do you know who they are? And I was like, no. And then he told me. And then, yeah, they're like very famous.
I love that feeling where, was he alone?
Yes.
Okay. So I love that feeling when you're like witnessing something in the world, but you're alone. So you have to turn to a stranger and be like, do you, this is what is going on. Like,
yeah. And he was just so obsessed. And also before that, before I found out who they were, this is so dumb. This is a boring story, but I had to go to the bathroom at intermission as I always do. I left my purse. I put it under my seat. I was like, no one's coming to the front row, going to take it and run away.
Yeah.
Wynn had to go to the bathroom and thought someone would steal my purse. So he took it. So when I got back,
oh no,
it wasn't there. And so I asked the two people behind me, I was like, do you see a purse? And like, they spent 10 minutes looking, not 10, probably
oh,
5 minutes
no.
looking for my purse with me before I knew that they
that
are.
That was thoughtful of Wynn though.
Yeah. Oh, it was. But then he came back. I was like, why the fuck did you take my purse? but what I laughed is the kid was like, you didn't know they were. And I was like, I gave them moments of anonymity. Like I treated them like the regular people at a Broadway show.
Yeah.
But anyways, and then we saw Funny Girl with Lea Michele.
Yeah. Was that great?
Yeah. Oh, I mean, what did they say about her? She's problematic, but boy, can she sing.
Yeah.
She is fucking incredible. At some point, like it felt like, did you watch Glee?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Okay. It was just like, I had to be like, wow, she's right there. Like it just, we were so close that it was just so bizarre.
I loved her before Glee because I love Spring Awakening.
Yes.
I still haven't watched that documentary.
Oh my God, can we watch it together?
Yeah, sure. Wow, I really just
Even know about, like, I wasn't in the Spring Awakening club, but then I watched the documentary and it's currently my top played album of the year.
Yeah, it's like one of my favorite musicals. Yeah.
Yeah, so I love that. Okay, so that's kind of how I was channeling her also because I just watched that.
Yes, okay.
She was amazing. It was great. Like it was, the dance numbers were so fun. It was whatever.
There's nothing like live performance.
No. And the best, I will say, if you live in New York City or you can go to New York City, our friend Chris would agree. It was because of him and a few other people that we went and saw this musical called Kimberly Akimbo. Mm-hmm. It's a new one. It's got to win a Tony. I feel like the main character like has to win. I just would be surprised if she didn't. It was charming. It was just so beautiful. I honestly decided that my niche musicals I like take place in high schools.
Like, that does not surprise
me. No, and it's like, also it takes place in 1999. And I like cried when I opened the playbill and it said like setting. And it said in 1999 before kids had cell phones. And I just was like, oh, I'm nostalgic.
We're a specific generation because we have had both.
Yes. Yeah. And so it was very much, there was instead of a roller rink, it was an ice rink. And they had like, the real, like, you know, when the sound of the person at the roller rink and the microphone?
Oh, yeah.
Like, they had something that made it sound like that. The inside of the lockers were like Leonardo DiCaprio, like cutouts.
Oh, yeah.
The bedspreads. Everything was just so incredibly done. I cried. I laughed. It was incredibly body inclusive, too. So I went from Funny Girl, where like everyone is thin. The girls who are in the chorus are like 6 feet tall, legs for days. I mean, incredible dancers. The men are very trim. The one main guy takes his shirt off, has like an 8-pack.
Yeah.
And then there was so much body like diversity in the show that I've like cried just like seeing like how you felt at Rocky Horror.
Yeah. Like it's such an incredible feeling seeing like people look different and the same as you or like, you know, it's just... It means something. It means something to people. And it's,
seven of the cast members, I think seven, it was their Broadway debut. Like almost all of them, which is just like very special also.
That's amazing.
So that's my soapbox. I'll get off it. But I will say that cast album better come out soon. And yeah, it's so good. It's so heartwarming. Go see it.
Well, and you also told me that you got yourself some Christmas decorations.
I did. Brie was so proud of me.
Yeah.
Speaking of Christmas decor.
It started.
What did John say? It's spreading.
So
Halloween is gone.
Halloween is gone. It's been gone. But yeah, I had a vision this year. I had some ideas and things, and I knew it would take a little extra time, so I started before Thanksgiving.
So you quit your job.
So I quit my job. I retired. And because I knew I would have to spend weeks decorating for the holidays.
That was the real reason.
Truly. I was thinking, like, what do I do next year? You know? But no, it's been really fun. I made garland, this dried orange garland this year.
And was that hard to do?
Oh, not really. I just like used a mandolin for the first time, sliced them. And then you just like put them in the oven for a long time and like flip them.
Does it smell good when you're doing that?
Uh-huh. And while I was doing it, I made like stovetop potpourri too.
Love that. Which wow, was, you had a moment.
I had a real moment.
Were you listening to Christmas music?
I did listen to a few songs. I've
Mary, did you know?
Kind of. Breath of Heaven by Amy Grant. And I did listen
Where
to
are
a Baby
you
Changes. I did listen to that one. I did listen to A Baby Changes Everything. And then mostly just the Amy Grant album. Yeah. I don't, like her like classic original Christmas one. Because I didn't want to get too deep into the
right.
Like classic Christmas songs, because we always listen to those coming home from getting our treat. Aww. And I didn't want to like listen to them without John.
Yeah.
And I know he doesn't really care about the ones that I was listening to. So
I have this memory. Do you remember when you lived with like your sister and her friend and whatever at that house, and we went over before Christmas and had like a Christmas dance party and all sat in chairs and cried to Where Are You Christmas?
Yes. It was like, you were like, this is like the first time it feels like Christmas. You were probably having
I was probably having I always have a time.
Time at the holidays.
The breakdown is
coming in hot, everyone.
Everyone look out.
Well, it's fine. I'm about to have a breakdown too, because I'm at the end of my semester. And so.
We need to time them so they're not at the same time.
Yeah. Because I was like spiraling last week, and then the holidays came, and I was like, I like just cut off the idea that I have school at all.
I absolutely understand.
Yeah, and so I'm just like putzing around and dancing around my house. And then I know that next week I have all of my finals like due within the next 2 weeks. And so
it's just not fair.
It's not.
It should be done before Thanksgiving.
But it's going to be such sweet relief when it is done, because that means my like crazy semester of four classes is done. I have one more class next semester, and that's all online. And then I am like, I'm in practicum, which is going to be really scary and hard, but like, I'm not going to be writing a bunch of papers. And like, so anyway, we're just, you know, that's when I'm going to need you most is next semester when I'm literally breaking down.
Perfect. I will plan on being well.
It was funny. I was chatting with one of my like classmates, and she took practicum last semester or over the summer or something. And I was like, is it like really bad? Like, is it like really hard? And she was like, yeah, I cried multiple times in front of my class. And I was like, Oh no. Great. I was hoping she'd be like, no, it's like not as bad as you think. But she was like, no, 100% it is. And it's, you feel like you don't know what you're doing, and it's just scary.
Better to have that expectation than someone telling you it's easy and then.
Yeah. Like, I think I need to like, but I also kind
of excited about it.
Well, yeah. And I also kind of feel like, you kind of attract sometimes what you think about. So if I'm thinking it's going to be awful, well, it's probably going to be awful.
Right.
So I'm trying to just like go in with like, it's going to be okay.
Yeah.
Regardless, instead of like, you know, this is going to be the end of me.
Also, like there may be a day that you romanticize this time of life when you were in grad school and like enjoy it, because won't go to it again. I hope not.
Well,
I mean, you could study something yet. Like, additionally.
Yes.
But not like, I'd like to be a vet and like start over. That's what I don't wish for you.
Oh gosh. No.
Also, sometimes diving into work can be therapeutic. Like I'm already, why I think my breakdown happens this time of year is because I finish weddings. And for the past, since April, it's been like, okay, well, I don't have time, whatever, because I have a wedding Saturday.
Yep.
Gotta be good. And honestly, wedding days are very healing for me, because something happens when I arrive where I completely forget about my own life. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, it's like probably the most present I ever am in my entire life is when I'm at a wedding day. And I don't even think about anything. Like, I don't want to, mom, if you're listening, I don't mean this in the bad way, but like, My mom had open heart surgery in February, my first wedding of the year. And I was like, how am I going to shoot this wedding while she's whatever? And I just like sort of did. Like, I just like was focused on something else.
Yeah. I mean,
so I don't have that anymore till.
And then everything cracks open that you've been setting,
my own life.
setting aside. And then everything feels like.
Yeah.
No, I think that makes a lot of sense. And I think that just shows what a good photographer you are. Thank you. Is just, I mean, I had the privilege of watching Abby.
I was kind of manic that day though.
You didn't seem manic enough.
I was.
You just are so good at it. Like, it just seems like, and I mean, how long have you been doing this? But it's like completely second nature. It's just, it's not even like, it doesn't even seem like you're working.
It's not hard.
You're just like, you know what you're doing and you.
I think I went up to you 100 times and was like, I'm doing terrible. And then I got home, pulled all the photos up and I was like, oh, it was fine. It went great.
I mean, they were beautiful. I mean, it's funny because I feel like that's like the same thing you will text me, even if I'm not, I was just there. So like you,
I had someone to talk to.
Yeah. So, no, but you did a beautiful job.
Thank
and
you.
She took this incredible photo of John, Jake,
Reva,
and me. It is like accidental renaissance.
It's a photo that like, there are a few where I'm mad I'm not in it. And that is one where I was like, I'm mad that I'm not in that because it's super fun.
Well, I sent it to our friend Chris and he was like, honestly, I might print that and post that up in my house or like on his board or whatever at work. And I was like, and John, we like woke up. I showed him that picture like the day before and we woke up the next day. I swear to God, we were laying in bed or maybe we were drinking coffee and he was like, I would really like a framed photo of that burger photo. I was like, what? Like he'd been thinking about
There's
it for
days.
There's
one of just you and your burger, which is honestly sexy. It's well, like, right? Because I did have one of you before I did the whole crew.
So it was just, it's always like such a, I've been to another wedding with Abby, but I didn't know anyone at that wedding in Cabo.
And we were in Cabo.
So that was.
And we were like separated the whole time. Like,
yeah. That was the first time I got to see you work. And that was like really cool to see, like actually work a wedding. But that one was stressful because I didn't know anyone.
We cried during the ceremony and then they hid the only photo that she's in.
Assholes,
which
man.
Which is absurd.
Just crazy.
I'll never
Whatever.
Forget that.
That's okay.
Either all our listeners, because guess what? We were podcasting
about
when that happened.
It. Yeah.
Okay. Do you have anything else you need to share before we...
No, that was a really long intro. I'm so happy you had fun in New York. We'll
Thank
talk
you.
About it even more off the mic.
Off air. Yeah. Off air. Oh. Post-up today, if anyone is wondering, we should have said this before, for our $10 patrons, is going to be just our overall thoughts about the entire season 15.
Yes.
So, yeah.
Cool.
All right. Let's dive in. I've been listening to a lot of binge mode Harry Potter, like re-listening. And they always go, let's dive into the pensive and sift deep through our thoughts. And I almost just like did that, like said that.
I would have been like, Abby, are you okay? Because none of those words made any sense to me.
I wonder if when people listen to us, they say it's a beautiful day to podcast.
I hope they do. And I hope their like partner is like, shut the fuck up.
Yeah, that's good. Okay. Well, I'll start.
Oh, okay. Monologue.
Okay. Scott, I already see a lot of big words. We're talking season 15, episode 23, 24, and 25, What I Did for Love, Drawn to the Blood, and Jump into the Fog, a favorite of mine. Okay. Here's a partial list of chemicals that our bodies produce when we're falling in love. PEA is a natural form of amphetamine. It puts us on high alert. Pheromones produced from DHEA create an inexplicable sense of well-being and comfort. Oxytocin has been called the cuddle hormone, and it stimulates the secretion of dopamine, estrogen with an O in front of it, and LHRH. This cascade of feel-good hormones and neurotransmitters is also generally accompanied by poor judgment. No wonder they call it crazy in love. When we're in love, the prefrontal cortex, where we make most of our good rational decisions, goes into sleep mode. And the amygdala, which activates our threat response defensive, calls in sick, which leaves us pretty vulnerable to take more risks. And left alone without our normal neurological protections, we might find ourselves in dangerous and unexpected places we normally wouldn't dream of going. Meredith Grey. Also apologize for my nasal voice, everyone. It's just a winter cold.
I don't even hear it.
Oh, I like, can't breathe.
Oh, that's the worst when you're talking and
I was
reading.
Winded. Yeah. Okay.
When a patient is dying on the table, the surgeon has to keep going no matter what. When we have to pee, we hold it. When we're heartbroken, we ignore it. When we're having a miscarriage and our husband has just been shot, well, you remember. The hope that we can fix the patient is what keeps us going through the worst moments of our life. That's kind of like what you're talking about, your job.
Yeah, true.
There will be no shortage of times when you feel like giving up, but you can't let the fear or desperation stop you. Even when you feel trapped, even when it feels like there's no end in sight, even when things are moving faster than you can comprehend, even when every part of you is certain that all is lost. Meredith Gray.
Insurmountable fear, unbearable pain, cruel injustice. As surgeons, we are faced with it every day. Impossible diagnosis, family tragedy, looming mortality. We face yours while we face our own. And some days, in the thick of it, in the worst of it, we feel just as lost as you do. When there's no clear path, all we can do is put one foot in front of the other. All we can do is the next right thing, and then the next. In the darkness, in the fog, all we can do is feel our way through and try to trust that somehow we will come out on the other side. Frozen 2?
Yeah, I was like, oh God, I got to listen to Frozen this season.
Yeah, that very much felt like,
yeah.
I love that song.
I love that movie. Okay, did you hear that there's going to be a Frozen 3?
Of course there is.
I bet it will be great.
I love Jonathan Groff so much.
I love...
That's why you need to watch the Spring Awakening documentary.
Yeah, I do. Ow, my knee just did something weird. Do you ever get like a shock through your knee? Mm. I think something's tearing slowly in my knee.
I'm sure.
Okay, so shotgun workup. We have Gabrielle Rivera, intestinal blockage, non-Hodgkin's lymphoma.
Lucas Ripley, aortic stenosis, systolic decrescendo murmur, hypocalcemia, lactic acidosis.
That was like a
acidosis. Quote. Sounds like it should be in Cinderella, like halakadu as acidosis. I don't know. It sounds
also
like,
crescendo decrescendo is like
beautiful,
like
it's canceling it out.
Yeah, it's very odd. Gus Carter, thymoma, anemia, myocardial infarction.
Carrie Donnelly, paralysis, cavitary lesion.
And Scott Carter, broken coccyx and punctured rectum.
Ow! That scene, I can't wait to talk about it.
Yeah.
Okay. It's Grace's stunt doubles are getting out of hand.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Buckle up, everyone. Or fast forward.
Whichever you choose.
Yeah. Okay. Jo comes to work as an in charge of hanging out with Gus. She gets a call from Winnipeg from a doctor who makes it sound like she has a patient with the same blood as Gus. Jo gets excited and quickly tells the doctor, Gus's mom, and Alex that they have a donor. She gets a call later and realizes that there has been a confusion. The hospital in Winnipeg thought that Gus was the donor and they wanted him to fly there. Jo has to tell Gus's mom that she was incorrect, and as she does so, they both begin to cry. Jo's crying quickly overwhelms the mother, who ends up hugging her until Alex and Bailey walk into the room. Alex gets Jo out of the room and the mother breaks down. Both Teddy and Ben had gone to the chief's office that day to let Bailey know that they didn't think that Jo was doing very well. Meredith wakes up from a bad dream in Jo's bed, where she has refused to leave until Jo talks to her. Jo finally tells Meredith about her mother and her mother's rapist and admits that she is not doing okay. Meredith talks about the time that she fell into the sound and chose not to fight, and she asks Jo if she wants to keep living. Jo says she does. Meredith tells Jo she needs to tell Bailey and Alex and get a proper leave of absence to get help. They head to the hospital, but when they arrive, Bailey is in the meeting with Catherine, and Meredith gets pulled into the hyperbaric chamber with Alex, who's treating Gus. After Jo spends the day back in scrubs helping with the blood donor, she tells Bailey what's wrong, as well as Alex, and together they take her to inpatient therapy.
We meet Gabrielle Rivera and her father, Luis, okay, who came to the United States from San Pedro Sula.
That's where I go.
Oh, really?
That's where Jilly lives.
Oh, I didn't realize that. And who have been separated from the rest of their family at the border. Luis.
She took French, everyone.
Good God. Works a job, but is unsure that he can afford the surgery that Gabrielle requires. Meredith is determined to help this little girl, and so she tells him it's taken care of. When they are about to start the surgery, Richard comes running in and asks if Ellis, Meredith's kid, is okay. Meredith put Ellis's name on the insurance form so that their coverage would apply to Gabrielle. Richard asks to see Meredith in his office after she refuses to stop the surgery. While in surgery, they detect non-Hodgkin's lymphoma and realize that Gabrielle will require years worth of treatment. Richard ends up giving in to Meredith and tells her that in order to start a new policy, they will need to keep her in the hospital for at least 30 days. Before this can happen, the medical group who provides insurance to all Graceland Memorial doctors shows up at the hospital for a meeting with Catherine and Bailey. They call DeLuca in to begin questioning him about the truth of who committed the medical insurance fraud. The next thing we see is DeLuca approaching Meredith in the hyperbaric chamber, where she can't escape, and telling her that he put down Ellis's name on the form and that he is sorry and that he will probably go to jail. She yells at him to not go and to not go to the police, but he walks away. Meredith tries to back up what she did to Catherine and Bailey when Richard and Alex come in and admit that they both knew about it and was all...
As well,
but didn't do anything. They ask Bailey what she's going to do about it, and she fires all three of them right there on the spot. Meredith heads to the jail, where she tells DeLuca that she loves him too, and she turns herself in.
Nice job. Maggie hasn't answered Jackson's request to move in together, and after a talk with the Station 19 Fire Chief Lucas Ripley, who is in the hospital for major heart conditions, she realizes she needs to be honest with him. She tells Jackson that she loves him, but she needs to take things slowly. Jackson would like to discuss the pros and cons with her while they go camping. Maggie and Jackson go camping and it's not going well. Maggie gets stung by a bee and twists her ankle while running. Then they get the call that Gus is not doing well and Teddy's water broke so she cannot cover her services. They begin to pack up their campsite and head out. While fighting, Maggie accuses Jackson of being Mr. Monopoly and not understanding what real life is like. She also says that she knows he loves her, but she doesn't think that he likes her as she is. When their car runs into the fog, Jackson gets out to see what's happening, and the episode ends with Maggie unable to find him.
Inspired by Carrie Donnelly's speech to her child about living a true and authentic life, Teddy heads to Owen's house to tell him that it's been him all along, and that despite Tom Karasik making her feel safe, it is Owen who she loves. Instead, she finds Amelia taking care of Leo there. Teddy tells Amelia her feelings, and as she is doing so, her water breaks. While on the way to the hospital, Amelia and Teddy get stuck in the highway traffic and end up convincing a cop car to drive them to the hospital. While en route, they talk about how they should be friends, and Amelia somehow brings up the fact that Owen slept with Karina. Teddy is furious about this, but doesn't have time to think about it before she's in active labor. While in labor, Owen professes his love to her, and she delivers a healthy baby girl who Allison. While all of this is happening, Tom is setting up a crib at Teddy's new apartment. Amelia and Link also look on while Teddy and Owen are holding their baby, and Amelia tells Link that while she can't make any decisions right now, she's open to a future with him. She just needs more time.
Gus has finally found a blood transplant, donor. And it is a woman who suffers from agoraphobia who flies in from London. She flies with her therapist, who unfortunately gets taken away at customs for reasons unknown. Schmidt and Owen are left to try and convince her to get off the plane and go in a car to the hospital. After a FaceTime with Gus and his mom, she puts a blanket over her head and they head to the car. An intense fog takes over the highway, and before they realize what's happening, a car crashes into them. Their car stops, and since the fog is so thick and no one can see, cars continue to crash into them. They eventually get to the hospital thanks to Levi's singing and Owen Hunt carrying her into the fog. Once there, she is put into the plant room where Joe calmly draws her blood and convinces her that she will be okay and that she saved a little boy's life. Joe gets the blood to Gus in the hyperbaric chamber just in enough time to save his life.
Nico was working with Kadri, Tom, Link, and Amelia on Carrie Donnelly, who is a quadriplegic, who miraculously began to move her limbs again. Even this medical miracle couldn't cheer Nico up. Link encourages Levi to leave Nico alone, but he perseveres. The episode ends with Nico in the basement of Levi's mom's house with him, where Levi finally tells his mom that Nico is his boyfriend. His mom smiles, brings them chicken soup, and they continue to cuddle on the couch.
Watching my girl.
So sad.
And his glasses.
Yes. I always say that to John. That's like our line to each other.
First note.
Mine is Zola knows about mom's boyfriend and is asking Auntie Amelia about her boyfriend. And then my next note is Zola's really coming for her aunts. She just Maggie and Amelia.
Exactly. And I just was like, oh, Maggie's still not figured out yet what she wants to do. Because she blamed it and said, like, I have to ask for her Meredith's permission.
Yeah.
They're doomed.
Clearly.
Okay, let's make this fun for us. It's the finale.
Okay.
And I feel like things were extreme in this episode. Like, everything was so extreme. What would you like to talk about first?
Why don't we talk about... let's talk about insurance fraud.
Dude, wild.
Whoa. Okay, so listeners, I watch these episodes. Abby goes to watch them, and she is like, calls me and it's like, our notes like are not aligning. Like your first note doesn't make any sense. Did you skip an episode? And I'm like, no, I like pretty sure I didn't. And then I go to my Netflix. I did skip an episode. So I accidentally watched the season premiere of season 16. But like in later episodes, I don't know if it's that episode or when, but they were talking about this insurance fraud. Oh like.
Because it had already happened.
Yeah. And I was like, I don't remember seeing that. I was like, maybe we never did see that. So anyway, it was nice to go back and watch it and be like, oh yeah, it
the actually puzzle pieces it make
did
sense.
Happen.
It feels like, especially how easy it was for Catherine to pull Luis and Gabrielle and be like, my foundation will take care of all of the costs.
Why couldn't they have just done that in the beginning?
I was just going to say, like, obviously it's for TV, but like idiotic.
They do pro bono all the time.
Whoa. I just had an attack.
Whoa.
Yeah. Like it's absurd. They should have thought of that. Like I get that Meredith is passionate about this and it is like just, it's such a horrible situation, but Meredith fucked up.
Yeah. And I mean, it's definitely like shit is in the news at this time because at one point Richard says they don't put your kids in jail with you, Meredith. And Meredith says, unless you come here seeking asylum.
Yes.
So that like clearly this was happening,
yes.
You know?
Yes.
And so it still is, but like
it's like probably
but Meredith, you're an idiot.
Yeah. And just like, also, I really just think, I remember watching this at first and like later in the next season being mad that Bailey just doesn't forgive Meredith. And I actually feel like Meredith does have this false sense of confidence that she can do whatever she wants at this hospital.
Absolutely.
Because she has in the past. And I actually like feel like it's really good leadership that Bailey just like fired them all. Although I felt really bad for Alex because like, granted, he didn't know what was happening, but like Richard pulled him in. And I think they did assume it would be an LVAD situation.
Yeah.
Which I love that she references that. Like, this is not an LVAD. You are not interns.
Yes.
And I feel like Alex is like, well, fuck. Also, I have a sad note. Can I bring it up?
Yeah.
It's in the notes and trivia, but I'm going to bring it up now. This is the last episode Alex works at Gray Sloan Memorial. Isn't that sad? The last time we'll see him in Navy scrubs. Because then he goes works at that other hospital and then he fucking leaves.
And then he leaves.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is really sad.
I know. It's very like, obviously it wasn't planned or it wouldn't have been this nonchalant.
Right.
They probably wouldn't have fired him. But yeah, so.
Wow.
I know. Have a moment of sadness.
Yeah.
This is our last season finale with Karev.
Holy shit. He leaves next season.
I know. And like mid. So anyways, there's that to look forward to.
Yeah.
Our next like shining moment with him, I feel like, is two things, like the re-proposal to Joe and then right. The letter reading.
Which that re-proposal doesn't happen, right?
What do you mean?
I watched a lot of episodes. That's not in this episode we're discussing.
No.
Okay, great.
Oh, does that happen in the premiere?
Cool. We'll just move. We're just going to slide right on past that.
So Merid, also, okay. There's a lot of toxic relationships in this episode. I feel like DeLuca and Meredith is sort of toxic.
Tell me more.
The fact that he would just like, oh, he said, I love you. And she didn't say it back. Whatever. That sometimes happens. But like him then like feeling not safe enough that if like he had told the truth and thrown her under the bus, that she would have been mad at him. And like, you know, cause he was like, what was I supposed to do? Like throw you under the bus. And I just feel like the fact that he's afraid of her in that sense and that he's willing to fucking lose his whole life for her, that's like not healthy.
No. Well,
jumping in front of a bus or something is like one thing, but like going to jail, I don't know.
No. Okay. I didn't take him as like being like afraid. I do think it's all very toxic, but I saw it. You mean, okay, let me just make sure I understand what you mean. You're saying like that he didn't try and stop her in general or tell in the beginning or when he turned himself in.
That like, he didn't feel that he could say the truth that he wasn't involved. Because I think he was, maybe not, but in my brain, it's like kind of like, what would have Meredith thought if he had just turned her in?
Yeah. Well, I also feel like,
I mean, obviously that's what she wanted. She ends up saying that, but I feel like he didn't think that she would want to take the fall.
I feel like he was trying to be a hero. That's well, how
yeah,
I,
both.
Okay. I just saw it as like, Meredith has three kids. I'm not going to like,
which I don't think is healthy for him to want to be this hero when like, she hasn't even said, I love you to him yet.
No, no. And like, Meredith needs to be held accountable for her actions.
Yeah, it's like he's, I guess it's like he's doing, it's like she didn't say I love you. He's taking these huge steps when like we don't know yet that the love is reciprocal. It obviously is, but I don't know. That's like a lot to put on the line.
But also, is this like part of who he is?
Yeah, it could be.
You know, like is this part of like, you know, kind of not like manic behavior, but like,
impulse?
That, yeah. Like impulsive. Yeah.
Cause it did feel quite impulsive.
Yeah.
Like so, to not even like have a second or, you know, I don't know. I just like thought, I mean, ultimately, you know, it's fine and he gets out and everything, but I just, I guess like I love people, but it would take a lot for me to like love them to put myself in jail for and lose my medical license. Yeah. I think I believe in justice in some terms, not like wrong justice, but like.
You would not do well at this hospital because everyone is like.
I'm breaking rules. I know. I feel like I'm like, I feel like I'm a Bailey. I've always said that. Like,
yeah.
I feel like Meredith should maybe not go to jail. The system, like I love the line when she said something like about like what I did was wrong, but the system is more wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Like I, like that I feel like is the, it's like, she's not a bad person. The system is fucked up and this is her way of like, she knows what she did wasn't right, but they also should have just tried a few more avenues.
Especially because it's was so easy with like Catherine Fox being like, we're going to take care of all of your medical bills and like my foundation will. Also, this show is like based on so many, like there have been so many cases where they've done shit pro bono that I don't understand why. I mean, obviously it's for television, right?
Right.
You know, but like insurance fraud is a huge fucking deal.
Yeah. And putting your own kid's name on.
Right.
How did you think that would fly?
In your hospital that like, why wouldn't that get fucking flagged?
Yeah. I thought it was, it's great. Like, obviously we know Richard has almost an unhealthy relationship with Meredith. It's more like a father child where he like was so mad at her, but then willing to be like, okay, well here's how we can fix it. They don't get the chance to do that. But ooh, Catherine's face at Richard, like she is so disappointed in him.
I mean, imagine if your husband did that.
Oh, I know. And then when he's like Catherine, like when Bailey fight and she just looks at him like, I'm not pulling you out of this. It's crazy. This is why they fight again.
Yes, they do fight again. And well, and then
that lady
comes in.
Was she in the premiere?
No, she wasn't. She was not in the premiere.
So anyways, I remember being very shocked by this. Like, or not shocked.
Like back when it happened.
Yeah, I'd be like, holy shit, Meredith. And she is not at practice. Remember, she's like picking up trash and.
Yeah, does she turn herself.
Think so.
Okay, so that's in the
first. But she doesn't go to. Oh no, she doesn't turn her. She talks to DeLuca. That's the last thing we see of her, and she's going to turn herself.
Yeah. Okay.
They could have done an Orange Is the New Black crossover.
Did you ever finish that?
Yeah,
I never did. I never watched the last season.
One of the characters was in Into the Woods.
Oh.
Yeah.
I need to.
She's like the older woman that works in the kitchen that doesn't talk. Like she never speaks.
Yes, I know who you're talking about.
So she's. Plays the like grandma and Into the Woods. And all of a sudden I was like, why? At first I thought I knew her from Grey's. Like I was like, is she a scrub nurse? I was like Googling it. And then, anyways, beautiful singer.
I feel like I can't just watch that season now. And then I would have to start all over again.
I feel like you could jump right in.
Okay. I don't know.
Wow. They always do a good recap in the beginning.
I remember watching the first episode. It was really weird. Remember there was like a
Is she not in jail when the last season starts?
No, she is. I don't know.
I love her brother. It's my favorite character in the whole show.
I don't remember.
Oh, he's the best. Did you watch Severance yet on Apple TV?
I haven't finished it either.
He's the writer.
Oh, we finished House of the Dragon.
Wow, we have to talk after this.
Yeah, okay.
This is not a House of the Dragon podcast.
Yeah. Okay. Anything else to say about insurance fraud?
No, Gabby is very cute, the little girl.
Oh, I know.
When she throws the thing at DeLuca. I liked when Alex was like, you should be in peds.
Yeah, that was really good. Like, and I think he should. He's really good with kids.
They did the MRI of her little horse.
Also, that would be like a gajillion dollars, right? To do, like, not only are they like insurance fraud, but then like.
Spending a shit ton of money.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's talk about Joe, just because I feel like this is very sad.
Yeah.
I felt so bad for her when she realized she fucked up. Like when the donor, the doctor called and like there was the miscommunication. Because I feel like that's like when you're not doing well enough and then like one more thing happens. Like,
yeah. I mean, she's clearly having a depressive episode. Like it's bad and she needs to be in treatment.
I appreciated Teddy being like, can I talk to the family with you? Like the fact that Teddy was like willing to do that part with her. Okay. One thing that really got me was like, so she's telling the mom starts crying. Then Joe starts crying. The mom fucking pulled herself together, hugged Joe. And then did you notice as soon as Joe was being walked out, like collapsed onto the bed? Like, it's like she held space for her long enough. And then just like, as soon as her responsibility to Joe, which she didn't even have, she like,
yeah.
And it just made me so sad.
I felt so bad when she like freaks out because that is like what Joe was afraid of, you know, when she rightfully would be like, and then you can tell the mom feels really bad that like, but then Joe's not doing well. And obviously this mother doesn't know this, but I can imagine being the mom and being like, this is mine, yes. You know? And that's why I think when Bailey sees, she like shuts the door because she's like,
yeah,
I gotta fix all of this. And then, you know, Alex is like, oh crap. Like,
I just feel like that woman was so like to hug Joe back and like let Joe cry on her shoulder.
Yeah.
That's like a nice woman.
Yeah. I mean, what was she done? Shoved her off of her?
Yeah, no, she was clearly not well in that moment.
Yeah. So Meredith ends up staying at Joe's.
Yes.
And I have what Meredith says to her, which I think is really important to read. So, you know, Joe's kind of like, leave me alone, get out of here. And then we kind of go back and forth through different scenes. But Joe ends up saying that like violence is like her birthright.
Uh-huh.
And Meredith responds back to her. She said, violence isn't your birthright or inheritance. It is something you survived because you are the opposite of that. You have an enormous will and an enormous heart, an enormous capacity for survival. You've taken all this darkness and used it to help other people who are walking through the same. You line the hallway with women to help that woman who is hurting badly, just hurt a little bit less. You've taken your darkest experience that life gave you and you turned it around and turned it into light. And if the woman who gave birth to you doesn't want to see that, then that's on her. I just thought that was so good. And then I love that she asks, like, she tells her the story about like, hey, one time I was drowning.
Can I read that part? Because I actually thought it was really the way the writing was where she says she slipped and fell into the sound. And she says, I thought to myself just for one moment, I thought, why fight? Why not just stop? And Joe says, but you fought. And Meredith goes, no, I didn't. Mm-hmm. The only reason I'm here is because the people who love me didn't stop fighting for me. And I love that she admits that to Joe because that's like...
Well, yeah. And that's the question right there. Like, Joe, are you like having a moment or like... Are you done fighting? And I like that Joe says she doesn't want to quit fighting, but she does. And it's like, okay, well, then we need to get you the proper leave of absence. And she says, we're going to go talk to Bailey and go talk to Alex and get you the right kind of help, the proper leave of absence. Come on, Joe, I have you.
I also love when she said, Alex Karev would not be the man he is without loving you or being loved by you, which is really special.
So yeah, I think it's really good that they show this and show that like, people have things happen to them and there are mental health crises and like we can work through them. Like it doesn't define you, you know what I mean? Like the people in your life still love you and like, let's just get you the proper help so we can.
I also like that part when she says in the next episode to Alex, like I can pull myself together like for this. Like she says something like, she basically says something like, yeah, I'm okay right now. I pulled myself together enough for these people, but like, I'm not okay. Mm-hmm. Like, I also think that's important too, which the monologue's kind of like, well, we're helping you. We could also be going through something. Like there's two things that can be happening at the same time.
Yeah.
Not to say that she should just continue on because she can work. That's not the point. But I just like that she also could like put words to that and be like, yeah, I can do this, but I'm not well.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was so sad when Alex turns her into therapy. Cause I feel like when he said to Mare too, like when he's in the chamber and he's like, I'm like alone. Like Joe is not well. You are going to go to jail. Like that's his biggest fear always is like being abandoned.
Right.
Yeah.
And, but it's where she needs to be and she'll be safe. And I just, I feel really bad for Alex too. And I just feel really bad because like they can't, like Joe is not in the space to be able to communicate right now either. Right, you know what I mean? And so that is really hard too, because like you want, you like almost want that person to be like, I'm going to be okay, but they're not, they can't do that, you know? So there's no one really there for Alex.
I love that Bailey says that though. Like,
yeah,
she's going to be okay. Like this is fixable. Yeah. So then I have a question about the premiere, not specifics, but is the premiere the episode with the therapist when she throws things at the wall? You would have known that.
No, I don't think so.
But Alex proposes?
Yeah.
Oh.
But like it's over weeks.
But she's still in therapy when it ends?
I feel like she keeps going to therapy.
Oh, okay. That makes more sense. Yeah. Okay. Got it. Speaking of therapy, I love that Owen Hunt thinks that because he's gone, he now is an expert. Like when the woman who has the agoraphobia, when he offers to go and he's just like, we've been through hard things. Like, I want to be like, you are not an expert on mental health now that you went to some therapy sessions.
I thought it was really frustrating when Owen comes up to Amelia and says he was wrong for saying she was incapable of love.
Uh-huh.
I was like, he doesn't really ever apologize though. I was like, I guess it's kind of implied, but he never once says sorry for that. He's like, I'm going to therapy. I realize I'm the one who's incapable of whatever. And it's like, well, that's kind of shitty. You should probably just apologize for what you said. Like,
yeah,
I'm sorry for saying those things to you.
Yeah, what did I say? Well, he says, I'm sorry I said that. It's not true. It's the opposite of true.
Oh, I did not hear that. I'm sorry.
That's okay. You didn't want to hear it.
I probably not, because Owen drives me bonkers.
But yeah, no, it's not great. And also, I mean, it's good to know that he does go twice, but or it goes more than once, I should say, to this person. Here is the thing. I'm just going to jump all around with Owen for a second.
Okay.
His timing of telling Teddy that he's in love with her while the ring of fire is happening in her vagina. I imagine, okay, granted, like maybe it's the person you want to hear that from because clearly Teddy does, but like I felt like he was holding her so much too that like I've never been in labor. And I know you need sometimes like push against someone or like hold a hand or squeeze, mm-hmm. but it felt like he was like cradling her.
Yeah, and taking up too much.
I felt uncomfortable wanting to be like, get off me.
Yeah.
And Mimi's like, I love you. And she's literally in the ring of fire. The head is crowning and she has to just sit there so she doesn't fucking rip.
Okay, so I really want to read these. I was like, what does the ring of fire feel like? And I found this article and I'm just going to read a couple of them because they're hilarious, but also like horrifying. So be in the space of Teddy where she's at. Okay. These are what women have said the ring of fire feels like, or, you know, whatever they are. Okay. Time and distance has kindly stricken that from my memory. Like you are legit shitting out a Costco sized bag worth of Doritos, no lube.
Oh.
I remember hearing other moms talk about the ring of fire, but no one ever really went into details about it. It was more of you'll know it when you feel it discussion. When I was delivering my almost 9-pound first child, I was introduced to the ring of fire and the moms were right. You know it when you feel it. It feels like your vagina is being ripped apart and set on fire at the same time. In reality, my vagina was sort of being ripped apart. I left the hospital with a lot of stitches, worst part of delivery, definitely. My epidural wore off by the time I got down to pushing. When my son started really crowning and I suspect his head was about halfway out, I started letting out the loudest, most guttural screams I've ever let out. I swear the entire labor and delivery floor could hear me. It was the most intense, localized, insane pain I have ever felt. It was so different from contractions. Once his head was out, I pushed once more for the rest of his body and the OB had to catch him as he came flying out of me. I don't recall how things felt after he was out because I was so fixated on watching him clear his airway, blah, blah, blah. Basically like one person is stretching one half of your vagina one way while another person stretches the other half of it the other way while a third person sets it on fire.
No!
Someone said there are no words.
God, I want an epidural when it happens to me.
Yeah. For me, it sort of feels like someone with with big meat hook hands is down in the vag with an oversized speculum that is crank powered
to
open and stretch the walls.
No.
And this person is spinning that crank like hell while distracted on Facebook. And so they don't realize they've spun the crank too fast and too far. So you're being stretched all to shit in what feels like a searing explosive burn, as if the person spinning the speculum crank decided to also snuff a cigarette out on the taut and raw skin.
Oh my God.
Aren't those like so graphic? I was like, I have to read these on the podcast.
The speculum one is the worst.
Yeah.
Oh.
Shitting out of Costco. Shitting out of Costco's
bag of Doritos.
There is no loop.
I'm holding my crotch.
I know. So imagine all that. And then Owen is like,
holding you.
I've always loved you. You're like, I'm shitting out Doritos right now.
That's what I mean. It was like, he was too close. And then like, I also thought it was weird that he wanted to look and she wouldn't let him. And then they started speaking in war speak. She said like, I don't want, and he's like, I've seen men ripped limb to limb. And she was like, she goes something like, I don't want you to see the war that's happening down there. And then he says something like, you've got this major. And
oh, I that part too much.
The whole fucking thing. Like, okay, this is apparently, there's the only non-traumatic birth in the of a main character in Grey's Anatomy.
Oh, wow.
It's traumatic to me because Owen is because Owen is there owning.
I did think that Teddy did an incredible job acting. I was like,
I liked that they made her sweaty too. Like her hair didn't look good, which is real.
Yeah. I also love that like Karina was like, you could masturbate, and she's just like, it's like so like fuck you, and it's like okay, that's not what
even we're- if I could, I don't, I could get it to work.
I also feel like that's something that has to be a part of your birth plan, like that has to be talked about beforehand to just throw it in there while you're in so much fucking pain.
Yeah, and like maybe you start earlier before you're in the ring of fire. How the fuck are you in the ring of fire?
And you're like, I'm gonna just jerk on real fast.
Like that wouldn't work.
No. Wait, the fire is similar to getting lemon juice on a paper cut and simultaneously burning it up in an oven.
Jesus Christ.
God.
I thought it was.
God, I just can't. I can't.
I've seen men ripped limb to limb.
It's like, okay, Owen. Like,
it just, also, what my note is literally, Owen tells her that he is in love with him. Or sorry, when she's in the ring of fire, fuck this. I would be so mad. Oh God, is Tom going to walk in? Poor sweet baby Tom building a crib.
Oh, I know. He's putting the crib together.
He's the one that went to the birth classes.
I know. Oh, there is the song that's playing while Teddy has the ring of fire. One of the lyrics is, it still burns or something. And I was like, wow, that is perfectly aligned.
I did have a note that it is a cute baby that comes out.
Yeah. Oh, and they both decided Allison.
Yeah. Which.
Did they talk about
does
it?
Does Owen know about Allison?
Not yet. No.
So how the fuck did he.
No, he knows about Allison.
Okay. As like a friend.
As a friend. But he doesn't know. Because remember, there's a whole thing. Like you named our child after your life.
Right. Yes. Okay. And I'd also be like, no, you named our child.
Yeah. I also love too during that scene where Karina says like something about geriatric. She's like, did you just say geriatric?
Also, great part when Karina says something. She's like, if it makes you feel better, she's like, the affair meant nothing to me. And Owen's like, what? Which is just so like perfect.
It's nice too with like Amelia, like bringing her. Oh, the part too. This made me really sad when, Teddy says, I want my mom when she goes into labor and she's like, okay, we'll get your mom. And she's like, she died a long time ago. And Amelia said, I love that Amelia's response was okay, but so what would she say? And then she, said she would be so mad at me. She would still rub my back and say, baby girl, I'm always on your side, no matter how wrong I think you are. So I just like, I often get this way when I get the stomach flu. Uh-huh. I've said out loud, like, I want my mom, as a 30-something-year-old person. And so I can't imagine like one of the scariest moments maybe of your life. And you're just like, I want my mom, and your mom's not there. That part made my heart.
I like that Amelia didn't like falter over that. She's just like, okay, so what would she say?
And then I love that when she's bringing her to the hospital, like she ends up like yelling at, telling Amelia to shut up or something. And then she says, I'm sorry. And Amelia's like, no, like pretty sure like you're allowed to say whatever you want when you're like in labor. So I don't know. It was nice that Amelia was the one to bring her to the hospital.
Yeah, I love that they become friends.
Yeah.
I wondered what you thought of like the tears that were in Amelia's eyes when she walks away. She tells Link, like, I'm not discounting you, but like, I need time. And she's looking at Owen and Teddy. What do you think the tears are about? Because her eyes are wet. Do you think it's like that it's finality of Owen being done?
I think maybe that. I wonder too, maybe about.
She knows she's pregnant? No.
Well, I wonder too, maybe about like her trauma with having a child.
And seeing a healthy baby.
And seeing a healthy baby and with Owen and maybe being like, I don't know if I could do that again or whatever, you know?
Yeah,
like,
no, that's a good thought. I think that could be correct. I think it's a lot of things. The reason I said the finality thing is because remember she says to Teddy, like, she's like, do you still love Owen? And she's like, I mean, like, yes, but no.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it's the 1-2 punch of those things.
I think
that she is probably pregnant.
Yeah.
Is she? Do we find out in the premiere?
We find out in the premiere.
Perfect.
This is a spoilers podcast and we've all seen him before.
So I guess it's good that like, she doesn't tell Link no. I like that she just says she needs more. That's what's so hard though. She says she wants more time. She wants to take this slowly. Like she doesn't get more time.
No, she is immediately pushed into
doomed from the start.
Relationship. So, what else we got?
Okay. Camping. What a mess.
Okay. So that scene where they're like fighting in the woods, I have been that person before. One time with
Maggie
my ex
or Jackson.
Maggie.
Okay.
With my ex-boyfriend, we were hiking in the UP. I did not want to be.
Is this the photo, the same trip where you were naked in that glorious photo by the beach?
Yeah, it was like a week-long
trip.
It's
a great photo. Anyways.
And I like camping, but like we were like hiking.
Yeah.
And
backpacking.
And the flies were really bad. Oh. And they were biting. And I finally like lost my shit and I just screamed, I fucking hate hiking. And he loved it. And it was one of those like, oh, I finally said how I feel about this. And so then we walked along the water on the way back because the flies weren't as bad. And I walked super far ahead and he like, we broke up.
Bugs found you.
Yeah.
Like how I feel Maggie so much when she says bugs find me.
I feel that too.
Dude, I can walk into a house and be like, there's a bug there. Like,
yeah.
Or does that mean I find bugs?
I feel like we went to that beach house where you took photos of my family.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And there was like flies.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And they weren't bothering anyone, but they were biting me like crazy.
We don't like that.
And then I came into the house and they were just all over my body.
Oh, I remember that on your legs.
And I was like screaming and crying. Yeah. So, yeah, bugs find me too. And it's fucked up.
I get it. And just fucking Jackson being like, yeah, let's discuss the pros and cons in a camping trip. He needs to find someone. This camping thing also doesn't.
Also, I feel like Jackson wouldn't
like camping. He likes sweaters.
It does not make any sense to me.
I did feel like, ooh, like when she called him Mr. Monopoly, that was rough. Also, though, I felt really sad for her. And I think it's true that like she said, you love me, but you don't like me as I am. That is such a different thing. I think you can love someone, but like also not like them. And she deserves someone that likes her.
Yes. So Jackson, okay, this whole time really bothered me. First of all, he says he didn't ask Maggie to change. He asked her to expand, which is fucking dumb.
Yeah.
And then he says, this was super condescending. He said, he says to her, but do you really know what you like? That is so condescending.
Yeah, he's not doing well in this episode.
No, and then that's when she calls him Mr. Monopoly, and that's when she's like, you don't like me. And he's like, Maggie, I love you. And she's like, yeah, I know you love me, but you don't like me.
Did your mother ever say to you, I love you, but I don't like you right now?
I don't think so. Did yours?
I don't think my mom did, but I think she told me that once her mom said that.
That's like, I would hate to hear that.
Like when they were little annoying.
Yeah. Little shits.
Yeah.
I'll remember not to say that to any children I have. I love you, but I really fucking hate you right now. It's not. Like, that's what that's like.
That's a real truth, though. Like, you're probably feeling that way, but don't say it.
Yeah. I don't know. I just, like, I thought Jackson was a total dick the entire
episode. Yeah, and then he gets lost in the fog, but it's actually really not a cliffhanger because, correct me if I'm wrong, he gets found right away.
He does, but he's with other people. He's, like, helping people.
Oh, of course he is.
Yeah. Yeah, I just felt bad for Maggie. Like, when all the things are stacking up against you out in the woods, you twist an ankle, you have a bug bite. Yeah. I did think, too, like, at first, like, it kind of seems like they're enjoying themselves. Like, they're going to have sex. And she's
then she eats a rock.
So, yeah, so well. And then it's just like, oh, this is not.
This is a disaster.
Yeah.
Okay.
What about Gus and the woman?
Very intense when they're in the chamber. Oh, I really liked the woman.
Yeah.
I don't know. She was charming. Maybe it was her accent.
Yeah.
And also, what's that woman? What's that book I read or that show? It's about agoraphobia. Woman in the Window.
A woman. Woman in the Wall?
No, I think it's Woman in the Window that I read this year. That was like about a woman with that. And so that was really like interesting to me. And
was it a fiction or like a true
fiction?
Yeah. Okay.
That like her therapist gets taken away was like, okay, well, is he fine? Is anyone going to check on him at customs?
No, and we never find out.
No, never. Same like that boy that ran off into the street. But I don't know. I mean, that car crash was terrifying.
Oh, this is so scary.
I love Levi singing.
Yeah, that was really sweet. And I thought this was a really nice line she says when she finally like makes it through it all. She says, there's something about going through your fears that is oddly freeing.
Aww.
And I was like, that's really nice. Because she made it through.
Don't worry. What did we call John last week? What animal?
A bunch of possums
in a trench coat. He's here again. Milling about the trash.
Why are you milling in the trash right now?
I felt like the Joe being the person to care for her was also a great choice, and in the plant room, like I love that they put her in there.
Oh yeah, I thought that was such a good idea instead of like some sterile hospital room.
Yes,
and they gave her like juice and
yep. And okay, and this is gonna like bleed. So I guess I don't have much. Oh, the dad falling. That was the most absurd thing I've ever seen. That's like, what? No one falls like that.
I want to smash something too. And then he fucking tears his rectum. That is insane.
No one falls like that.
No, it was the most like
cartoon
slip. I mean, we say that now and then.
Stepping on Legos sure does hurt though.
But why does he slip like that?
I don't know.
And you have to, that's falling really hard to
tear your rectum. Did a Lego go in? Oh. I don't know. I guess why was that needed? I guess for that scene with the mom laughing at like him breaking his butt. Like,
I guess, but I don't think
I don't think it
was necessary at all.
No.
Insane writing.
So that's really all that I have to say about Gus. I mean, like, I'm glad he's fine. Also, wow.
I did think it was good too. Like, it just shows how like Alex is committed to his patients and they're in the chamber and Mara's like, you pretty much like swap and he thinks she's telling him to stop. And he's like, I'm not going to stop and I'm going to whatever. And she's like, yeah, no, I know, but just swap with me because you are. And then, and then he lives, right?
Yep. Can we talk about Nico and Levi?
Yeah.
Okay.
First of all, Nico is being a dick.
Levi is climbing high on my list. Like, I actually feel like he does have a character.
Yeah.
But we just
needed a rewatch.
Like, even when he like, it starts out with him like going to bring him flowers.
Yes.
And like, he's just trying so hard. And like, even in the moment that we're supposed to think is this like lovely moment where Levi tells his mom that it's his boyfriend. I love the mom. Like, love the way she just doesn't make a thing out of it. And then Nico, like, doesn't even look at Levi and just says, you're amazing. And they just, like, sit. I was like, you didn't even look. It's everything he does is so insincere.
Well, I think I didn't feel that way about that moment.
You liked that moment?
I just thought that, like, similarly, like, Nico's in a fucking space now.
They are watching My Girl.
Yeah, like, he's teary-eyed.
Yeah.
Like, I think he is unwell. Like, kind of, you know, maybe not, like, Joe status, but, like, I didn't see that as like him being insincere. I thought like he's literally just like, you're amazing. Your mom's amazing. This is, you know.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. He also tells, I felt so bad for Levi when he tells Nico that he knows he's annoying. Like he was like, I know I'm annoying. Like I was with a woman who was anxious and like, it was annoying. I know I'm like that. And I want to be like, no, fucking stop. You're not.
You're
like,
not annoying.
That's just who you are. It doesn't mean... I don't know. I just feel like he should be with someone that doesn't make him feel like that.
I mean, what do you think about, what's his name?
Link?
Yeah, Link, like, kind of telling Levi to, like, cool it.
I mean, I get it. The way he described what it feels like when you accidentally murder someone.
And I love how Levi's like, see, if he would only, yeah. like, express himself.
Yeah, exactly. So I get that he's, like, saying, like, nothing you can do will help, but I don't know. I just don't think Nico deserves him. I don't know if it's the acting either. Like, he doesn't give me anything.
Yeah.
His sincere moments have no facial expression. Like, he doesn't... I don't know.
Yeah.
I just feel bad for Levi, and it feels like an unhealthy relationship.
Yeah, I want to go quickly back to Levi's mom, because I just, like... I love that she's like, I heard my girl. So that means we're having a bad day. So hearing my girl means we're having a bad day. So that means I'm bringing you chicken soup. And I love that she then just says like, well, then I guess this is for you with like, it's actually my boyfriend. And I don't know. It was, and then she was just like tittered out of there. Like,
and well, she said, we'll have lots to talk about later,
yeah.
But not in like a mean voice. I also, one of my notes, this is going to be inappropriate, but I said, oh, look, the stairs that his mother will fall down.
Oh, my gosh.
She comes down the stairs.
Yeah, and then he has to, like, clear her airway.
Does she die?
No.
Okay.
He has to save her, remember, because he's going through something.
In the Levi basement. Is. Get out of the basement, people.
Yeah. Okay. Do we have anything left?
I just wanted to say, I didn't mention this in the mayor thing. The last quote she says to DeLuca is, let me clean up my own messes and live in my own truth. But what I was trying to remedy was so much more wrong. And then she says, I love you too. And
yeah.
It's just, let me clean up my own messes. The fog.
Oh, we do have that one patient.
Carrie Donnelly.
Yeah. I do have a note that I was just kind of like, why... It doesn't really matter where it is, but like, whoa. Oh, I'm weirdly not moved by this mom and her child.
Yeah, I wasn't either. I don't know why.
It didn't like do anything for
me. No, like the speech was lovely about like living your true self, like that
great, yeah,
whole part.
Yeah.
But I guess I didn't really like, if she moves her finger, is she going to walk again?
I don't know.
But I like when Tom was like, tilt the camera down.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I don't have much to say about it either.
One other like random note that I think is funny is, I said, oh Jesus, Jackson, did he fall down a ravine? He fell into a river, and then he says it's a creek. and then Amelia has a line that kills me. She said, I don't think people give that tumor the credit it deserves.
I have a line when Tom, in the beginning, asks, make sure that she's hydrating and doing her Kegels to Teddy. And then he says something about the birth playlist. I hope you like Enya.
And yeah. Yeah.
More foreshadowing, sadly, that he won't be there for the birth.
Yeah. Why do I have, hey, Dr. Weber, it's Dr. Weber. LOL, duh, you just said that, Schmidt.
I have no idea. Did you just have a conversation with yourself?
Probably.
Hey, Dr. Weber, it's Dr. Weber.
I don't think I really have anything else. Should we do notes and trivia?
Yeah, let's do it. And then I have to blow my nose.
Oh my goodness.
Okay. The episode's title originated from the song What I Did for Love, originally from A Chorus Line.
It scored 6.96 million viewers. And is the first part of a crossover with Station 19.
This episode's title originated from the song Drawn to the Blood, originally sung by Sufjan Stevens.
It scored 6.37 million viewers.
The episode's title originated from the song Jump Into the Fog, originally sung by the Wombats.
Wow, it scored 5.97. So it went from 6.9 to 6.3 to 5.9.
A series low.
Yeah. The rather large drop in viewership may be explained by the fact that the series finale of the long-running sitcom The Big Bang Theory aired at the same time, which attracted about 33% increase from its regular viewership.
That makes sense. That was a big show. I didn't watch it, but Jake is watching it right now. This episode features a special opening title card with fog in the background.
Oh, wow. This is the last episode to feature Alex Krev on staff at Grace Home Memorial and his last appearance in the Navy Blue Scrubs.
This is the first season finale since season 7 not to feature Jason George as Ben Warren.
Goof. While Carrie is celebrating being able to move her fingers, you can see her legs moving under the blanket.
Goof, Bailey mistakenly refers to Meredith's daughter as Ellis Gray. The child's name is Ellis Shepherd. Oh. Ellis Gray is Meredith's deceased mother. Also, I kept writing Meredith's child because I could not remember if Ellis was a girl or a boy.
Yeah, it's Bailey is the
right
boy and Ellis is the girl and Zola.
Catherine Fox Award.
Wow. I'm going to give it to Owen. I'm kidding. This is a tough one.
Not Meredith.
Not Meredith.
Not really. I don't want to give it to DeLuca. I guess it was heroically what he did. Honestly, Alex? Well, I mean, what he did for Gus.
Yeah.
Teddy did give birth.
Joe's getting the help that she needs.
Who won the episode? Like, who's the winner? I feel like the winner is Owen. He got a baby and his love.
Yeah.
If we are spinning it that way.
Or who
did the best? I'd say Teddy. She became friends with Amelia. She tried to talk to Joe.
And she got the love.
And she had a baby.
Yeah. Let's give it to Teddy.
Great. Okay, rating it. The one that I liked was actually like, the only one that I really liked was like the first one.
Mm-hmm. I feel like I would rate it different if I included the season premiere.
Of season finales, though, this is low on my totem pole.
Yeah.
I feel bad, but I'm going to give it a 6.5.
Whoa.
The fog didn't do anything for me.
Yeah, I would probably give it, I felt a lot of things about the Teddy labor.
That's true.
That was like high for me. I don't know, those scenes. But it also, whatever. Oh. I'll do 6.52. Yeah, I was not, especially with like the first episode we watched, like I just didn't care about anything really right. That was going on.
What happened last season finale?
Oh, Jesus. That was season 14. Was that the fire?
Was Stephanie? That was a few ago.
Was that 13?
Right.
Was it Riggs?
Oh, yeah, it was Riggs. That season finale was better to me.
Yeah. Yeah, so that was the fire.
Oh. That seems crazy.
I think that's right.
Grey's Anatomy. This is where we're going to get a bad review.
I mean, it's really hard when you are like so focused on a couple episodes.
Oh, no, it's the wedding. It's Alex and Joe's wedding.
Oh, duh.
13 is that. Yeah. I was like, wait a second.
Okay. All right. Well. Okay.
Even that was better.
Yeah.
Because April.
Yeah.
So, okay. Anyways, if you would like to hear our thoughts on the entire season and you are a patron, please make sure you're listening on the Patreon app or in your RSS feed. And thank you for supporting us. And we will...
Oh my gosh. Time of death.
Oh.
Is 2000.